You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining us on Perspectives this afternoon is Bill Armstrong. Bill is a former captain in the U.S. Army. He is also a former television reporter, producer, editor, photographer. And also, I'm proud to say that he is my best friend, former college roommate in undergraduate school, also best man at my wedding, and I was best man at his wedding. Now, you wrote a couple of books, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. The first one is Go For Ghosts. And what is the one that you wrote for your pets?
Hi, Louie. Thank you. The pets book is called Far-Fetched, Who Let the Cats Out?
You've always been interested in writing, of course, and as when we were college roommates, we used to listen to old-time radio a lot, and we were a lot into nostalgia and the Twilight Zone. And I'm thinking, after I read Gulf War Ghosts, that I kind of sensed a little bit of the Twilight Zone in there. Of course, give us your perspective.
Well, Louie, you're dead on with that. Some of my happiest college memories were being back in the dormitory room in C-109 of Garcia Hall with you, and late night we would listen to some radio programs. One of my favorite was called Nightfall, and Radio Mystery Theater was so fantastic at painting a picture without an actual image. I can remember just lying there and seeing these mysteries unravel, and then, you know, you could get a chill up your spine with the way they used sound effects and things like that. So I've always enjoyed that little sense of fear and doubt and just a lack of a safety line. And I think that is one of the motivations for writing Gulf War Ghosts. And in addition to that, some of your listeners may remember back in the mid-1970s, there was a one-season television show called Kolchak, The Night Stalker, and that was with Darren McGavin, a fantastic actor. And it was the kind of thing where a reporter would go out and investigate very strange happenings. And sometimes he got to the bottom of it, and sometimes he did not. But I loved just the concept of that. So that also inspired.
Now, you took a kind of a strange turn of events in your life. Both of us did, because we were both in television news, as I mentioned, after we left New Mexico State University. And then you decided to apply for officer candidate school. And of course, with your credentials, they grabbed you right away. And then I decided to go into academia. And here I am now, and we're back together. We have seen each other. It's been a while. But you did go to the first Gulf War. Is that Desert Storm? Is that what it was called?
Yes, that's right, Louie. In the first Gulf War, which it really started August 2nd, 1990, and that's when Saddam Hussein and his army invaded Kuwait. And Kuwait was another oil-rich kingdom down there. And so I was stationed in Germany at the time with the U.S. Army's 3rd Armored Division, which back then was a very heavy armored division. We had a lot of tanks, Apache helicopters, and self-propelled howitzers, the big cannons that looked like tanks at a distance. But we had the assets. We had a lot of people. And we went down there to Saudi Arabia and waited a couple of weeks for our equipment to arrive. And then we started heading north during the air war, hoping, almost positive, certain that this thing was going to come to an end before we had a ground war. But unfortunately, Saddam just didn't pull back when he needed to. So we rolled across the border into Iraq and ran into a couple of the Republican Guard divisions from the Iraqi army. We did a lot of night fighting. And after that, after the ceasefire, we remained there on the ground as part of the ceasefire operations to try to put down small disturbances and run a refugee camp for some of the Iraqi citizens who had been persecuted under his regime.
We are speaking with William P. Armstrong. He is the author of Gulf War Ghosts and Far-Fetched. And these are books that you can get. They're e-books. And Gulf War Ghosts is actually a novella. And Bill, if you wouldn't mind telling us, telling our listeners, what is the difference between a novel, a novella, and short story?
Really comes to length. You know, a short story I see is a few pages. It might be 3 pages or maybe 18 pages or so in length. And a novella is closer to maybe 100 pages. But for a traditional book publisher, they really don't want to look at a novella, generally speaking. They don't want to roll the presses and print up all those copies. They can't really justify the cost using traditional printing methods. So ebook, when that became available to writers, it just opened the floodgates. It gave us a wonderful tool for getting a story out that you really feel should not be stretched to 200, 300, 400 pages in length. You can get to the meat of the story quickly, and it's something that someone can read in an evening. They can just say if you're traveling, you've got it with you in your hotel, you can lay down, read the thing, and you're done before you go to sleep.
One of the reviews, actually, that I read about Gulf War Ghosts was written by a veteran. And one of the things that he said he really liked, he was hesitant to read it at first. He said because he had read military historical fiction before, and a lot of the things were wrong. Just kind of like you and I have when we would watch stuff on TV, a show, whatever, and they say, that's not the way they do it in television. They're just, you know, showing everybody a different way. But this gentleman said he really liked the fact that you did your research and you got everything right, you know, as far as like the names of the companies, Gary Owen, everything like that.
Well, Louis, I think it's really important if you're going to write about a time in history and one that so many people were involved in, you know, hundreds of thousands of coalition troops from different countries. And all of the people back home that you would send letters to, or maybe they were watching it unfold on CNN, it's important to include details that were happening then that were correct. There's nothing worse than watching a movie about the 1970s and some guy walks by on a cell phone. So when I was writing Gulf War Ghosts, I first started going through my own memories. I pulled back letters because fortunately my wife, Patrice, saved all of the letters that I sent home to her during that time. And there were little incidents that I made notes of. For example, anybody who was around in that particular war ate more MREs than they care to remember, meals ready to eat. Nowadays, soldiers have much tastier things that they can consume when they're out on a combat mission. But, you know, the MREs, they were dull, but they would fill you up fast. People back then did not have email or public internet like we do today, so you had snail mail. It was probably the last war to use snail mail as much as we did. Minefields were everywhere. That was worth noting because anybody, as soon as you arrived in the theater of operations, the big rule was stay on the road. Don't stray off the road. You could blow yourself up very quickly. And if you don't have a road, then at least follow the ruts, the wheel ruts left by the vehicle that preceded you. So, and other things, camel spiders. I remember vividly laying on a cot after the ceasefire was signed, and I was in a very large canvas tent, and a couple of my friends in my unit just shouted at me suddenly. I was just laying there with my eyes closed, and I saw a blur go over my head, and it was a huge camel spider. They're very fast-moving arachnids, and they're parasitic. They tend to cling to the bottom of a camel, and, you know, they're not going to kill you. They're not necessarily poisonous. It's just a dirty bite. But if it's the first time you've seen one and the span of the legs is close to a foot, it's very scary. And so I tried to include details like that into the book so that anybody who was there or has read about it will say, oh, yeah, I remember that. I had to go through that or you know, this happened to a buddy of mine. So I'm hoping that keeps the interest of the reader.
When I read about the camel spider in your book, I immediately remembered that you're not a big fan of spiders.
You are so right. I have to tell you, I have always been afraid of spiders, and I hate to admit that kind of weakness. I'm a grown man, but even when I was in Fort Benning in Georgia, in those southern woods with all those smaller trees, I was doing a thing called dismounted nighttime land navigation. So you have a map and a compass, and you're walking maybe 500 yards through the woods, and all you have is a flashlight with a red lens on it. You can't have white light. And I'm trying to look at my map and walk forward and remember how many steps I've taken. They call it a pace count. And I'm trying to get to a stake in the ground that has a number and or a letter on it and write that down. And so you're out literally all night writing down these things. And at the end of the course, they see how many of them you got correct. And as I was walking along between two trees, I hit a spider web that felt like a big rubber band. I let out a yelp, and one of my friends, another officer candidate, was many yards away from me, and he just yelled through the darkness of night, "Armstrong, you sound like a little girl over there." And I couldn't stop laughing. It was like, okay, Bill, get a hold of yourself. It's just a spider. So, yeah, I still have that arachnophobia, but I'll tell you, around my house, I'm the one who kills the spiders. If my wife spots one, I'm right there. I'll take care of business, even though I don't like it.
Well, you said you're a grown man, but we all have phobias of some kind. And so in our dorm, I killed the spiders, and you killed the mice.
Except yeah, I killed a lot of time, too.
Yeah, and it took me a while to climb on top of a chair because I was so little. We are speaking with William P. Armstrong. He is the author of Gulf War Ghosts and Far-Fetched. And we've talked a little bit about his background and what he did. And I'm going to ask you one more question before we actually get to the plot of the book, Bill. When you went to Kuwait and Iraq as a former reporter, did you see the war from a different perspective?
I did. Louis, that was a strange thing. During the Gulf War, I was part of a public affairs unit with the 3rd Armored Division, and our job was to escort civilian news reporters, whether they were radio, television, or newspaper. And so those people were assigned to us from a media pool out of Riyadh, where General Schwarzkopf and his folks were based. So they would fly them out on a Black Hawk helicopter to the forward units where we were located, and then we would drive between fighting units so that they could actually see the battle as it went along. And, you know, there are certain rules that have to be followed in a war zone, and it's not like covering a gang fight in Albuquerque or something like that. So reporters have even more restrictions, or at least they did back then, that they had to follow. And in addition to trying to keep them within the rules, we also had to protect them. And for me, it was a challenge. I wanted them to get their story, but I had to keep them safe. My job was to make sure they could get to talk to soldiers firsthand during a battle, after a battle, talk to commanders during after-action reviews, and get some photographs of some of the things that we passed through. That might have been a burning tank that had just had its turret popped off by an A-10 Warthog aircraft, or maybe by an Apache helicopter, or something else. And so it was, you just had to stay very alert and with safety as your top priority, instead of, you know, your reporter instincts of, hurry up, let's get as close as we can, and let's get a sound bite, and let's get a shot of this. You kind of have to put that reporter sense aside and think more of soldier safety.
Bill, was this the first war where reporters were embedded with the military?
I think to this degree it was. I know, I remember as a kid watching on nightly news where CBS or someone would have a correspondent out in the jungles in Vietnam. But I think that in this case, because it was an actual, more of a ground war like you would see in World War II, this was a time when reporters were able to get their story back much sooner than in the old days, where maybe it had to travel by courier, maybe it had to get on a truck and then on a ship or an aircraft. With us, for example, we had a gentleman who used to be a reporter for ABC News named Jim Wooten, and Jim came out with his crew. They had a satellite link on their vehicle, And so they would ride with us, alongside of us. And as the war went, Jim would just step out of the vehicle. The cameraman and sound person would set him up. They'd get a satellite link and send their story directly to ABC. And, you know, he was a very seasoned reporter and followed the rules. He was a joy to work with. But that's the kind of thing you did not get in previous conflicts, was that instant news coverage that the Gulf War introduced.
I know you're very humble, very modest, but you were awarded a Bronze Star during this war.
Yes, sir. That's right, Louis. I don't want to talk a lot about it, but...
That's fine.
It's based on an incident. We ended up in a minefield. We backed up probably a mile in reverse at a very slow speed using night vision goggles. I just thought it was part of the deal, but one of the reporters went to my commander, and wow, he sure painted it up. So it was a wonderful honor to receive that.
Well, congratulations, and again, thank you for your service. We are speaking with William Patrick Armstrong. He is a former captain in the U.S. Army, also a former television news reporter, photographer, and editor. He's also the author of the recent book, Gulf War Ghosts and Far-Fetched, and we're going to talk about Gulf War Ghosts now. At the beginning of the program, Bill, we talked a little bit about old-time radio and the Twilight Zone, which was actually the only show that went from television to radio. Most of the other shows went from radio to television. But I remember you doing some great impressions of Rod Serling, and we enjoyed watching those television shows. And so tell us a little bit about the Gulf War Ghosts and how this story came about.
Well, Gulf War Ghosts probably started as a result of some nightmares that I had in recent years. And I would talk to my wife about them. You know, everything's fine and you're working your day job and you go to sleep, and for some reason after you've been asleep a couple of hours you find yourself back in Iraq and back in a combat mode. And the thing about Gulf War Ghosts, though, it really goes pretty far beyond reality. The gist of it is this: someone is killing soldiers, American soldiers in Iraq, following the ceasefire that was signed for Operation Desert Storm. And we have our hero, Major Walt Ransom, and his job is to figure out who is doing this killing. So he puts together this group of experts to basically hunt down what turns out to be a squad of German troops left over from the Second World War. And you'll have to read the book to get details on that. And boy, I could almost call this one far-fetched too, but I didn't. And so his team makes some pretty strange discoveries as they go through the clues, and more attacks happen and people get killed and the bad guys disappear. So he's got a certain amount of time that he's got to figure out what's causing this, because he's getting a lot of heat from his higher headquarters. Like, you better find out what's happening to our soldiers and our equipment and do it fast. So I'm hoping that the pace will keep the reader interested to just not put it down.
It's a perfect story, as I mentioned, kind of like the Twilight Zone, because all of a sudden, these people are going, wait a minute, these are soldiers from World War II. And a lot of the commanders, as you mentioned, aren't believing them. The one soldier who says that he saw one of them wearing an Iron Cross, and they're just going, wait a minute, I don't know what you guys are talking about. And it goes back, well, I don't want to give the story away, but as you mentioned, it's a fast read. It takes about maybe an hour or two, depending on how fast you read. But it really captures your attention, because you're going, wait a minute, what is going on here, and where did these guys come from? And you did some excellent research talking about these Nazi ghosts, because Hitler wanted soldiers who wouldn't die.
He did. He was fascinated with the occult, and the person who did a lot of the research and experiments for him was Heinrich Himmler. And when the two of them got together, it seemed like endless possibilities in their minds for coming up with super soldiers. And I think what some people may not realize is that there really were, in the past, German troops in that part of the world. And in this case, in reality, there were German troops, small units who were trying to win the hearts and minds of the local population and also slow down the British army advance that was coming through there. Because, you know, after a while with Rommel's Africa Corps, the German army in North Africa, they were winning for a while, but later on the tide turned and there were other parts of that area, that region, that were desirable to Germany. And with the oil, the assets, the ports and things like that, it was something they did not want to easily give up. So I tried to make a historic tie-in that way.
As I mentioned, some people, like yourself, you have what some people might call flashbacks or nightmares, and certainly somebody can understand that, because I have a friend who recently recovered from a head-on collision, and he said that he kept dreaming the fact that he was in that crash, and he kept seeing it over and over again. And because of that, that's why this soldier who wrote a review said that he was hesitant to pick it up, because they really don't want to talk about it, read about it, or remember anything like that. But the way it's written, it's very interesting because, as you mentioned, it's historical, it's a mystery, it's a thriller. And you did our troops, and again, thank you very much for serving our country. In July, I think, you had a giveaway, didn't you, for some of the soldiers up in New Mexico?
Well, I had a giveaway on Goodreads on the
on Goodreads, yes, okay.
And so it's kind of a way of saying, hey, I wrote something, let me know what you think, and you can keep the book. And that was the nice thing about the technology today, is you don't have to just do an e-book. With Gulf War Ghosts, I also had the option of getting a print-on-demand, a paperback version of it, which a lot of people prefer. They want to have something sitting in their hands and not read a backlit electronic screen. And we're in that point of time where you've got some on the paperback side and some who say, no, let's just keep it all green and we'll just do e-books. It's nice to be able to accommodate both sets of readers. I was thrilled that things timed out the way they did. You know, if I'd tried this 10 years ago, I probably would not be able to self-publish. I would have had to wait for approval from a publisher, a traditional publishing house. So this has been just a treat for me.
You did write an interesting little pamphlet about the Grand Canyon. And I was fascinated to read about Raton because, as you know, that's where my wife Susan is from, and you mentioned that in that book.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Louie. That was back in 1999. I was working at Grand Canyon. My wife and I had sold our real estate publishing business down in Las Cruces, so we decided to get less stressful jobs. And when I was up there, the more I read about Fred Harvey, he was the hotel person who basically brought hotels out west with the railroads in the latter part of the 19th century. So every 100 miles or so, he would put up a hotel and a dining facility. So I wrote, I guess it would be considered a novella. It's really, it's almost a pamphlet. It's such a short book, Fred Harvey, the Creator of Western Hospitality. And that went through a publisher who brought books to the Grand Canyon, to the bookshops there. And it was just fun. It was my first taste of seeing something in print, but it kind of planted the bug in me to someday sit down and hammer out something else.
Well, you know me, I love history and I love historical facts, and so that was a fun read. We are visiting with William P. Armstrong. He is the author of Gulf War Ghosts, also Far-Fetched. He is a former captain in the Army, and he was also a television news reporter, editor, and photographer. And, Bill, we talked about Gulf War Ghosts, but before this, you came out with Far-Fetched, and this was a fun book. And you and I both love pets, and I know that you love cats a lot. So tell us about Far-Fetched.
Well, you know, you're right. When it comes to cats, we've always had them. When I was a little kid, we had cats. We also had dogs. And watching cats and dogs learn to get along and share simple things like a pet bed or a water bowl, you never knew how it was going to go. Somebody may not have been in a good mood that day, and you'd hear some growling, and sometimes some fur would fly. So my wife and I had a dog. She was a rescue dog, and she was a yellow Labrador mix. I think her father may have been a German Shepherd. She had a big dark streak down her tail, and she was the most loving friend on four legs. She was just a wonderful dog. We had her for 14 years, and a couple of years ago, she finally passed on. So the dog, the primary dog in Farfetch'd, Who Let the Cats Out, is a dog named Mary, and that's based on our former pet. And then the two cats are based on the two cats that we have currently. They're a couple of 8-year-old smaller cats. They're black short hair cats, male and female, and they're from the same litter. So we've got a brother and sister still in the house here, and they rule the house with an iron paw. It just seems like they're spoiled rotten. So, but we love them. They give us a lot of enjoyment. They're also rescue animals. There was a shelter south of Albuquerque that brought them up to a local pet store to show them off, to try to get them adopted. My wife and I looked at them. We went away to lunch, talked about it, came back, and thought, if they're still around, we're going to take them home. And here, almost 8 years later, they're still under the roof with us.
Well, Bill, thank you very much for visiting with us. It has been great. And you and I, of course, are very nostalgic. We hosted a radio show of oldies, the Johnny and Billy Show, and we had a great time. And we were probably the first people to interview Flipper, if you remember that.
Yep, that was my bicycle pump for my 10-speed bike.
It was fun. But thank you very much. We've been visiting with William P. Armstrong. He is the author of Gulf War Ghosts, also Farfetch'd. And if you want to find out more about the book Gulf War Ghosts, you can go to Goodreads, or you can go to Amazon, or you can go just Google Gulf War Ghosts, and you'll see the book. Bill, thank you very much for being with us.
Louis, it's been my pleasure, and thank you for your lifelong friendship.
Thank you.
This conversation with Bill Armstrong, along with a myriad of other author chats, may be found on KTEP.org under the title of Perspectives. Louis also welcomes suggestions for future author interviews. You'll find the Contact Us button on our website, along with a lot of other things that may intrigue you. This episode of Perspectives was edited by line producer Belinda Fernandez.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.